Our episodes contain graphic information and at times strong language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Would you like some murder with your coffee?
Welcome to Morning Murders. I'm Nicole.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Brenna. We're just three gals like to sit around, drink coffee, and talk about true crime.
True crime. The truest of crime. I like it, ladies and beans. So this one is a difficult one to talk about. I had known very little about it when I watched the Australian 60 Minutes on it. It was one of those cases that just kind of found its way onto my computer screen, and I just couldn't ignore it. There will be some sound bites from interviews I watched and some very troubling and upsetting things that get brought up. I say this just to give an additional trigger warning before we even get started. If violence towards children is something that you don't want to hear today, then please join us next week for a new episode. We, as always, support you, Beans, and your mental health is the most important. We talk about terrible things on this podcast, and sometimes the topic is just too much to handle. We completely understand and support you. With all that in mind, ladies and beans, have you ever heard of the murder of James Bulger? Maybe. So I'm leading this case with James and not the murderers. I will talk about them too, and there are some difficult conversations that may come up based on who they are. But before we get into all of that, I want to talk a little about James. James Patrick Bulger was born on March 16th, 1990. He lived in the Liverpool area in England. He was an energetic ball of light. He loved exploring, laughing, playing, and learning. Once he learned to walk, he was said to run into rooms. He loved to be silly and make people laugh. He has three younger brothers that he never got to meet because James was kidnapped and murdered when he was only 2 years old. Yeah. So his mother, Denise, and James had gone to the Strand Shopping Center on February 12th, 1993. Denise's friend had invited them to join her. They had only been there a few minutes when Denise went to pay for her order at the butcher shop. When she turned back to James, he was gone. That was around 1:45 p.m. Denise tries to find James on her own and then enlists the help of the Strand Shopping Center police after 40 minutes of searching to no avail. 4 hours into the search, Merseyside Police CID take over and detectives are brought in. 9 hours into the search, they finally find something on the CCTV. On the video are two young boys seen leading James away. And the video footage is too grainy to get a clear picture, so they can't identify the boys.
Yeah, back then CCTV wasn't as, like, good or like the coverage in the area that they had also like wasn't nearly as good. So I can imagine
or there'd
like
be those things that's like it only takes a frame every couple of seconds. It's not even like a continuous video.
Stop motion kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And having to go through all that, yeah, that just it's a lot harder back then. Then, like, nowadays, we'd just be like, we went to Walmart at this time and you bought all this Drano.
And I saw you like, on seven different Ring cameras.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, so it's just, God, that's so different now.
Yeah, so after 17 hours, a press conference is held and Denise pleads to the public and hopefully the boys that took James to bring him home. When the detectives mapped out what happened, they realized that James was out of the Strand about 1 minute and 30 seconds after he made contact with the boys. They'd spent so much time searching the shopping center when the truth was, he was gone almost instantly. The police started to think that maybe it was okay since it was two boys that took him and not two adults. 21 hours into the search, they start to focus more on the witnesses that they found on the CCTV camera. The police stations were getting so much information from people calling in that information got lost because they just didn't have enough staff to keep up. 32 hours pass, and it's the second night that James has been away from his family. Then, 39 hours into the search, a witness comes forward saying they thought they had seen the boys in a location that was 2.5 miles away from the Strand. Which means at 1:45 p.m., James went missing, and at 4:20 p.m., when the police took over the investigation, the boys were long gone from the area, like gone 2.5 miles away. 48 hours into the investigation, Mandy Waller, a police constable who joined the search for James when it first began, took Denise out into a police car to drive around and look for James. She had been with Denise and thought it would be good to get her out of the station. So taking her on a drive sounded like a good distraction from the energy at the station, and they could just look for James.
Moments after they left, though, they get called back in, and Mandy is told to turn off her radio. Denise knew what that meant, though. She could sense it. They found James, and it wasn't going to be how everyone was hoping. They got back to the station and were told that they found a body on a railway over 2 hours away from the Strand. The state in which James was found was so horrifically devastating that they instantly knew he had been murdered. It was no accident. On the first day of the murder investigation, Mandy goes with James's uncle to identify the body. At this point, they are still no closer to finding out who these boys with James were. They knew that they were white males and possibly between the ages of 12 and 15 years old. Day two of the investigation, the police had interviewed over 60 boys in the area who had records or run-ins with the police. On the third day of the investigation, there had been a shrine made by the community for James, and the police had also reached out again to the public for help. This time, there was another camera found that had caught the boys walking to the railway. This camera caught them walking along a wall, which the police were hopeful to get a better idea of the height of the boys. And it was then that they realized that the boys might be younger than they thought.
Oh, my God.
Day four of the investigation, there is a major breakthrough. A woman came into the police department after seeing the newly released photo. She told the police that her son came home a mess and had paint on him, and he had been with another boy from school. He was only 10 years old, but she said it could be him in the photo. His name is John Venables. So he went to St. Mary's, and a detective on the case named John Fitzsimmons called the school to find out if John had been in school on Friday. Turns out he and his friend Robert Thompson were both absent that day, and Robert lived pretty close to where James was found. February 18th at 7 a.m., Detective John Fitzsimmons and his team are sent to arrest John Venables, and a second team with Detectives Phil Roberts and Lori Dalton are sent to arrest Robert Thompson. While Phil and Lori were at Robert's house and telling him why they were there, he doesn't really seem to react until they tell him he has to go down to the police station with them. It's then that he starts crying. Once the boys are arrested, they are taken to separate police stations to be interviewed. They are arrested at 7 a.m., and the first interviews do not begin until 5 p.m. Quite a long time to have the boys waiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gives them a lot of time to think about it.
Mm-hmm. So during the first interview, John was asked if they were at the Strand, and he said, we never. He denied being at the Strand that day. Unknown to the boys, though, there was a store manager that had come forward that said the boys were hanging out in front of the shop and put their hands all over the glass windows. The detective team then went and pulled all the fingerprints from those windows, which would come back to match the boys' fingerprints. They were there. There was proof.
Oh, my God.
So legally, you cannot interview a child without an adult present, right? So John had his mom, and Robert had a solicitor named Dominic Lloyd. During the interviews, both boys have moments of crying and denial, but Robert was the first of the two to start talking about what happened. John would continue to say they were never there and that Robert was a liar for a few more hours. When Detective Phil and Lori talked to Robert, or Bobby as they would come to call him, at the beginning of the interview, Robert was asked if he gets called Robert or Bobby, and he said both. And the detective then said, how about Bobby? It's friendlier, don't you think? And he said, yes. So he calls him Bobby. Robert, or Bobby, would often refer to James as the baby, even if detectives said James. Robert would say that he didn't kill him over and over, and that it was John, and that he knew he was going to get the blame because he had blood on him. At one point, he starts crying a lot, and the detectives go and get him a Coke and a Mars bar to help calm him down. At this point, he does calm down and actually starts to think he's going to go home soon. He had answered all their questions. What else was there to do still? I'm going to play a clip now from the interview so you get more of a sense of 10-year-old Robert.
And he was immediately given a Mars bar and a can of Coke. And he latched onto this because when I say he cried, there was not a drop of water. There wasn't a tear.
2055.
Maybe you want to go home tonight?
We don't know yet. And I want you to tell me.
I don't need to answer any more questions, do I?
I ain't come on now, Bobby.
Yeah, well, I don't want to kill him, and I've got a baby of my own.
I'm trying to.
He wants to kill a baby, I kill my own, wouldn't I?
Okay, so he's in the interview room and he's talking to the detectives. And Bobby kind of interrupts the detective because he's like, he wants to go home. So that's what he's saying. He's saying, can I go home? I don't have to answer any more questions, do I?
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, I didn't kill him. He's saying he didn't kill him because if he has a baby of his own, and if he was gonna kill a baby, he would just kill his own, wouldn't I? That's what he's saying. Yeah.
That's a scary thing to hear out of a child's mouth.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It is. I love that. Because, you know, you watch a lot of, like, Jim Can't Swim and Explore With Us. They do a lot of, they show interrogation video and then do, mm-hmm. like, commentary on it. And it's interesting watching how people will justify, like, it's like, but this isn't so bad, right? And you're like, no, murder still happened. Like mm-hmm. even if you justify it in your mind, that justification isn't, That wasn't a good enough reason to cover. I would just kill my own baby.
Yeah, right. But that's why you said you'd kill a baby.
Like, if I was going to kill a guy, there's guys on the street every day. I mm-hmm. could have killed any of these guys. Mm-hmm. It doesn't.
It's like,
your 10-year-old logic here isn't really doesn't sound. Work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's just it. He's 10 years old.
I know.
He is a 10-year-old child who has made a very terrible... Oh, that's how you do it. Thank you. I couldn't figure it out.
It's okay. It was being a little booger.
But yeah, so that's I saved that one because I was like, did he just say that?
Yeah.
I'd kill my own baby, right? That's like, if I had a piece of chocolate, I wouldn't take your chocolate. I'd eat my own chocolate, mm-hmm. right? I understand the logic. Yeah. However.
This however.
Is a life. So John is being interviewed at the same time by Detective Jim at a different station. After the third interview, John finally admits to being at the Strand. But he says they never took or robbed a kid. His mom gets mad at him for his back-and-forth answers, and Jim tells her not to get mad at him, not to get mad at John. After a moment, John then admits that it was his idea to take James, but that it was Robert's idea to kill him. The next day, I believe this is like day six into the investigation, they would get a sense that John doesn't want to further upset his mom, so he talks to her privately. She tells him that they will always love and support him, and he needs to tell the truth. When Jim goes back into the room, John admits that he killed James.
We went outside to check him out.
What for?
Don't know, he said let's throw him in the water. He was persuading, he said kneel down and let's look at the water and all that, but he wouldn't. Because when we wouldn't get him down, Robert picked him up and threw him on the floor, and that's where he got his bump on his head.
What were you going to, why were you taking him to Lotton Village?
Don't know, he didn't know what to do.
You walk along where?
To the stranger. We took him around, so he started throwing bricks at him.
So John is saying that Robert originally wanted to push him into a canal. And so there's a canal right outside of the Strand. And so John is saying that they walked down to the canal and that Robert was trying to persuade James to look into the water so that he could push him into the water. But James wouldn't go near the water. So then Robert gets mad at him and he kicks him. And he, like, falls and bumps his head. And, like, because there's a lot of head trauma on James. And so John is saying that's how he got the bump on his head. Then the police officer or the detective asks him, so then you started walking away to where? And you're like, well, you started walking to the railway. So then he's talking about how they got to the train track. And then when they got to the train track, they started throwing bricks at him. So now we have these two 10-year-old boys that have admitted to taking James from the Strand, trying to get him to fall into a canal. And then when that didn't work, they walked him 2.5 miles to the train tracks and threw bricks at him. John tells the detectives that he never threw bricks at James, that Robert was the one who told him to do it, and that Robert would do it, but John would just throw them on the ground. When the team tells Robert this, he gets very upset, and he says it was John, and John says it was him, and the boys just continue to blame each other.
He certainly admitted throwing stones and things like that.
But he's blaming you for a lot of things.
Yeah, but why is he blaming me?
Well, I want to know the truth, right, Matt? The whole truth. There's other things gone on, isn't there?
We're asking you, son, and we want you to tell us the truth, that's all. Not give the blame to you or anything else. But it's only the truth that we're saying.
Can we just go through slowly, right, what John did with what, right? You said he got hit with a brick first, didn't he? Then what did he do?
Another brick.
He threw another brick.
So Robert saying, you know, like I mentioned earlier, he's like, I'm going to get blamed for everything because I have blood on me, because he's got blood on his outfit. Mm-hmm. And he continues to tell the detective that it was John that threw the bricks first. It was John's idea to throw the brick. And he's like, well, then what did he do after he threw the brick? Well, he threw another brick. It's like, what are you saying? And then John.
What was Robert saying while he was doing all this?
He was saying to stay down, stupid dick.
Why do you want him to stay down?
Don't know. I wanted him dead properly.
Where did the stones in the bar hit him?
In the head.
And you said the bar knocked him out?
Yeah. Onto the railway track.
And what happened then?
No, he was just lying there. To finish now because I can't speak anymore.
So that's John talking about Robert. So now they've both admitted to the things that have happened. They've both said that bricks and stones have gotten thrown. And John has gone so far to say there was also a metal bar that Robert has hit James with. And then he stopped moving. So the police can't make a charge until they have more solid evidence. That should always be true, honestly. But this case is very sensitive because it involves children, boys under 10 years old. So they're really careful at making sure they've got solid evidence. They feel like they have gathered enough with the fingerprints, the CCTV, and then they get a lot of eyewitnesses that have come forward or that they found because of the people that were on the video recordings as well.
Right.
So they do finally charge John and Robert officially with the murder of James on February 20th, 1993. They are the youngest kids to face a murder charge in over 100 years in the UK.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So 10 days after James is murdered, the boys appear at Sefton Magistrates Court. There was a massive crowd that gathered outside. People from the community had shown up, and they were outraged. They wanted to teach the boys a lesson. The crowd was out for blood. It was actually really scary to watch, like, some of those clips. Like, first of all, they're also children, so yeah. Stand back.
What are you going to do, kill a child?
What are you going to do? What is the lesson here?
Yeah,
I understand that you're angry. Of course you're angry, but, like, also, are you going to... What is the lesson exactly?
Right.
In March, there was a funeral held for James at Sacred Heart Church. There was a tiny white coffin, stuffed bears, flowers that were made to look like bears. It was full of sadness, but also filled with love. The community really showed up and showed their support to Denise and the family. The first day of the trial wasn't until November 1st, 1993, which is 9 months since the murder.
Damn.
Yeah. They were taken to the court in two separate police vans. Robert was said to seem to understand the gravity of what was going on, and he was scared. 38 witnesses were called. They had seen the boys making the journey to the tracks. Some recalled thinking that James was laughing. Others admitted it sounded like he was crying or screaming, but no one did anything. One woman even admits to seeing Robert hit James and shake him, but she closed the curtains. Now, there was this other woman who did approach them. She was an older woman who had noticed James and his injuries. She walked up to them and asked what was wrong, seeing James was crying and clearly hurt. John and Robert simply said, "We found him at the bottom of the hill." She then told them to take the little one to the nearby Walton Lane police station. She claims she called out to them once more as they were walking away, but the boys did not look back.
You're the grown-up. You go, there are a bunch of kids here. I'm going to take you to the police station.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Ah!
Though she was still worried, another woman called out to her and said she had heard the toddler laughing a moment ago and didn't think anything was really wrong. The older woman saw on the news later that night the story about James and called the police. She told them what she had seen and regretted not doing anything. There was another woman who stopped the boys, worried about the little one. She said she could take the toddler to the police herself, and she asked another neighbor to watch her daughter while she did that. The woman said no because her dog didn't like children.
Mm-hmm. Great. Cool.
And with that, the boys continued on.
I want to give a shout out to Magnum Coffee.
Magnum Coffee.
They're a coffeery in here. A coffeetery.
Coffeetery.
A coffeetery in Vegas. And I think it's at least where they roast their beans. But they're a company in town, and they're really cool, and they're really nice, and they have delicious coffee. They're kind of over by the airport if you're a Vegas person.
Like Sunset and...
Not quite Eastern.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's really cool. They do coffee stuff there. They also donated a gourmet coffee basket for the Playhouse. So thank you, Magnum Coffee. Also, you have delicious coffee.
Thank you.
For being
delicious
coffee. Oh, coffee.
Love that.
Development Hell is back, guys.
Development Hell is the podcast that Richard Humphreys and Kyle Anderson has with another gentleman that's, I'm sure, very lovely as well. I'm very sorry that I don't know your name, but I love that podcast. They do, like, a stupid, awesome deep dive about, like, a movie that took forever to get made. They just did the Speed Racer, like, and it's so good. And they just, like, they're funny. Their anchor ad is my favorite one. And because they tell the truth about how we make millions of dollars off of Anchor. Mm-hmm. they're not afraid to tell the truth. And they're just funny boys, and I love it. And I'm somebody that likes to learn a ton of shit about stupid things. They did a whole thing about Godzilla, and it's so great. And King Kong, like, it's so great. So I highly recommend it if you want to learn about movies and projects and video games and stuff like that that just took forever.
Yeah.
Fun.
Nice.
Awesome.
That's really awesome.
How much did they pay you for that ad?
not enough.
No, just kidding. They paid me nothing. They paid me in friendship because I love them.
Ah,
friendship. Gross.
I love it.
Friendship.
They walked into two different stores. They talked to the people in those stores that later said it was suspicious, but all of them just let it go. There were other kids they ran into, two older boys. They told the boys that James was Robert's brother and they were taking him home. Then they arrived at the railway. There was talk that the two boys may have hesitated in going through with what they were planning, but whether they did or not, it doesn't matter because in the end, they did it. They tortured James, both of them. They tortured him and then they murdered him. This was from around 5:45 p.m., about 4 hours from when he went missing, to 6:30 p.m.
Yikes.
All of the witnesses expressed guilt for not stopping the boys. Many of them confessed that they had just thought that James was with older brothers. When the evidence of the abuse was brought to light, and this is a lot, so if you don't want to hear this, this list, please skip ahead a few minutes. It was said that there were 42 injuries to his face, head, and body, over 30 separate blows from bricks, stones, feet, and a 22-pound iron bar that accounted for 10 skull fractures. They smashed blue paint the two boys had stolen into James's left eye, and they even stuffed batteries into his mouth. He was so badly tortured that the cause of death was impossible to tell. Any of the injuries could have done it. The forensic pathologist did conclude that James was already deceased when they placed him on the tracks. They believed the two left before the train came in an attempt to make everything look like an accident, but the evidence proved it was a prolonged attack. Now, the team had taken Robert's shoes without untying them during the investigation. They compared the shoes against injuries on James. They had recreated like a life-size doll, just like James, and they had the results in the shoe. They had like all the markings on the doll, and they had a lot of them had resulted in shoe characteristics, and when they compared it to the shoes of Robert, it was a match. So Denise did not attend the long trial, but she did attend the last day, the day of the verdict. November 24th, 1993, the court was packed. The verdict was announced, guilty. And the judge said they would be put away for a very, very long time in detention. Robert started gasping for air and seemed to go into shock. John started crying. The gravity of the situation and the consequences of what they did never really hit them until that moment, I think.
Yeah.
They really thought they were just going to go home. Now, a very, very long time meant 7 years and 8 months.
Yeah, of course.
In a secure children's home, not a prison, which is what Denise thought was going to happen to them. She thought they would end up spending some time in prison when they got older. So the family was actually really upset with the verdict after finding out the details. When everything hit the fan, Robert really seemed to be affected. It was almost like he regressed developmentally. He started acting younger. He would suck his thumb a lot. Robert and John were sent to two different secure children's homes, but they both met with Amanda Knowles. She was a unit manager, specifically at the home that Robert was at, but still saw John sometimes. She truly believes that no child is born evil and that there is always hope with the right care. And with Robert, that really seemed to be true. He worked with psychologists, and with their support and him really putting in the work, he was truly helped. And after his sentence was completed, he did go back into society and never went back into the criminal system. Dominic Lloyd, the man who was Robert's solicitor, talked about how in the beginning he truly felt that Robert was innocent. Over the course of the investigation, when the evidence showed otherwise, he accepted that, but he remained by Robert's side. He grew very close to the boy during the investigation and wanted to remain a support in hopes that it would help Robert become a better adult in the future.
Mm-hmm.
John's part of this horrific case, unfortunately, has a very different ending. His backstory, they say, is a little more troubling than Robert's. He comes from a more unstable family and witnessed his mother and father deal with depression and alcohol abuse. His mother also had a history of domestic violence. John would, when John was in the secure, like, children's home, he would make really cruel comments to the workers about other children or himself or whatever. And, like, that never really got better. In June 2001, both John and Robert are released on life license. So life license, what it basically means is that you're released from prison or secured children's detention in this case with a list of conditions, and that's your life your life license. If you break any of those conditions or commit another crime, you are sent back to prison. So the boys are given new identities and lifelong lifelong anonymity.
You got it.
Lifelong anonymity, which means they cannot be identified by law once they are released. Only four other people have been granted this in England, based on an article I found from 2019. Its link is in our sources. Since their release in 2001, Robert has not been accused of breaching his license. John has. John has been in and out of prison. In 2010, he was sentenced to 2 years in prison. He has been found guilty of possessing 57 indecent photographs of children and distributing 7 indecent images of children.
Woof.
In 2017, he was arrested again for collecting child abuse photos online. He even posed as a woman online selling kids for abuse.
Was he the one that regressed? Was that the one?
No, Robert's the one that regressed. John is the one that was like, we never did it. We were never there. Okay, wait, no, we were there. Okay, no, but it was Robert's fault. Okay, no, I was the one that did it. And he's the one who, like, in the children's detention home, would just say really cruel comments.
Interesting.
In September 2020, he was denied parole. He is still in prison, and the family is fighting to keep him there. I read in a more recent article from August 2022, that John is up for parole bid again. James's family were contacted to give victim impact statements again. They have to do it every time. Every time a parole comes up, the families have to go through it all over again.
Right. It's awful.
There is a new law that might get passed where it will be possible to veto the release of dangerous prisoners, but the timing of that was uncertain in the article that I read. In another article that was from December of last year, it said that he could expect a date to be in front of a panel of people in 2023 this year. So they're still ongoing about what's going to happen with John. For a long time, Denise felt like she let James down, like she should have done more, fought harder. But James lives on in the memories and stories that the family share. The brothers James never met grew up knowing who James was and his personality, and he remained a beautiful part of the family even after he was gone. Mm. And that is the story of James Bulger. Any final sips?
I mean, one blaring lesson that I learned is just that if you see something, I know it's weird and it's hard and maybe you don't want to get involved, but especially with this, like, I understand the bystander effect, and I also understand, like, not wanting to get hurt and get inside of a fight. But if there's younger kids and you're the adult and you get a bad feeling, you need to say something. And it's just so unfortunate because I feel like there were so many times where this, maybe it wouldn't have gotten completely stopped, but who knows, right?
Who knows?
Yeah. Things could have just been different.
Mm-hmm.
They could have, and it's really hard when kids that age roughhouse all of 24 right. hours a day, right? Right. So it's like, so it's like, hard to determine, is this real danger, or are you, like, is something really happening here, or are you guys just playing with each other? Because kids sometimes don't understand their own strength, or, you know, like, whatever.
We've all hurt our siblings at some point, being like, whoop, didn't mean to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I can understand why people didn't do something. I don't like that people didn't do anything, and I can see why they would just be like, oh, it's just boys. Boys being boys, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is what got this boy killed, is boys being boys.
Yeah.
And just decided to take him. There is this thing called a CASA volunteer, a advocate for children's physical education, medical, emotional, and social needs. So a CASA person is a court-appointed special advocate, like that Dominic guy.
Yeah.
Anyone can do it. Anyone can be this. This is a job that anyone can have. So it's like 33 hours of training and 3 hours of court observation, and then like there's 12 hours of like continuing your education with them, and all you do is you're the advocate for a child in a court case where they would otherwise just be by themselves sitting there.
Wow.
So yeah, anyone can do that. That's the thing anybody can do. Yeah.
That's
Neat. Incredible.
Yeah. I
didn't know that existed.
I didn't either.
So yeah, I was like, oh yeah, we did. There's a few, there's CASA everywhere, and CASA also does like, they help kids out that are in like foster programs and everything too, and do there's a CASA program that partners with a salon that's in town called Square, and they do like a whole thing where kids can come in and get haircuts and, you know, get school supplies and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. So they do all sorts of stuff, but that is something that you can do as a person in your life.
Wow, that's really amazing.
Can we link that?
We'll link it in the show notes.
Check out
our show
notes.
Do that.
Thanks, Brenna. Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, it's tough when that stuff happens. I think I've watched something recently where it's almost like a brainwashing deprogramming when they're older, when people are older and they justify killing somebody, like even if it's just like, this person made me upset, or I just wanted to try, or like whatever that was. Mm-hmm. It's like a deprogramming of what the consequences of that are. I think, did we watch the thing with that teenager kid, Seth, who was murdered by his like three friends or four friends or something? And then the one of them was like, I can't go away for 5 years. Like, my boyfriend's not gonna stick around.
With me that
long. And we were like,
longer than that, honey.
You killed somebody, or you helped somebody get murdered. Like, what? Like, so it's interesting that, like, I guess I was talking to Carolyn, who's our composer for our theme song, about, like, how it's, like, the consequences don't get understood, but I'm, like, I guess not everybody, grew up watching Law & Order. Like, I guess not everybody grows up being aware that if you kill somebody, you go to jail for a long time, like, at the very least, but, like, or to jail, like... So, or something like that. Like, there's consequences to the action.
I feel like at that age, too, we're just so scared of what our parents are going to do. Because I don't think I ever thought about, like, well, but I could go to jail. It was like, but my parents. So I think maybe that's, at least while I was listening to it, of having that moment of like, oh, that's why they were like, wait, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
They can't go home, what? Because they can't comprehend this. You said, they don't have this in their, like, vocabulary yet.
Right.
That's not the word. You know what I mean.
Yeah, they haven't been taught that that's a thing that is a possibility
in their lives.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, like, the brain literally isn't firing the right whatever neurons. I'm not a brain doctor.
What?
But
wait, what?
Yeah, no,
I'm
what?
Fucking out
of
here.
Like, what podcast is this? But they literally, like, haven't developed the ability to even fully comprehend that yet. Like, their brain doesn't fire yet. And connect those dots yet.
Mm-hmm.
Is watching Bones. And Bones, Temperance Brennan, which is all based off of a lot of truth, because the creator of the book series is actually a forensic... Pathologist, bone person.
Cool.
All the things.
Bone science.
Bone science. But, like, the facts they talk about in the show are actually true. And there's a case where there is a kid that, you know, hurts another child or whatever. And she talks about how they don't fully understand stuff yet because, like, the way that the brain is functioning. I also learned that when I was doing yoga ed training for children and trauma. And just how, depending on what you've gone through, will also affect how your brain develops and what it latches onto. Because so, like, the way you grew up, like you were saying, Amanda, that you were like, oh, I think about my parents first. Mm-hmm. And in some other kids' cases, their parents are so neglectful that they wouldn't even think about their parents at all.
Right.
You know, they might think about a sibling or a neighbor or, like, nothing because they don't have that structure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all very interesting with the way you can grow up or the trauma you can experience at certain ages. I mean, birth is trauma we all share. Like, that's literally trauma we all go through as babies. But, like, as you progress as a child, you just, depending on how you grow up and what environment you grew up in, what you're exposed to, maybe you play sports, maybe you get hit in the head, like, whatever it is, all of those play factors in how your brain develops.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting. And, like, what I wish we could understand, like, what made the boys choose to go down this path and think that that was, you know, a good idea. And they kept saying that, like, or at least one of them would keep saying, Helios John, like, oh, we didn't have a plan. We didn't know what we were doing. Okay, well, if you didn't know what you were doing, then how come X, Y, and Z happened? Like, you made up lies to people who stopped you. Mm-hmm. You clearly at some point started to plan a thing. Where did that come from? And, like, I'm glad that Robert was able to go through the system and, like, have a positive outcome, because that doesn't happen very often. As we can see, John went the completely other direction. Mm-hmm. And it's so fascinating and sad and terrifying that, like, these two boys who did the same thing went two totally different directions once they were separated. So it also makes me think of things we've talked about in the past about couples. Mm-hmm. When couples get together and they just feed that negative thing about each other.
They get high, like, that on shared each hysteria. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, like, and having that happen to you when you're so young, too. I mean, kids already do wild and crazy things, mm-hmm. and, like, mean things, you know, throw rocks at stuff they shouldn't throw rocks at.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Throw water balloons over fences when they shouldn't do that, you know?
Throw rocks over freeway passes and kill people in cars, because they're mm-hmm. just kids and they don't really fully understand the consequences of all that. Or they do, and the idea of caring about it isn't developed yet either.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing where it's like, I know when you die, you're gone, but I don't know why that matters to me yet, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's the gravity of other. Because mm-hmm. it's, like, when you're a kid for so long, like, everything is about you. Because, like, you're being, like, that's all you got, you know? That's your whole world is, like, what you've been given up to that point. Mm-hmm. So then, like, it's kind of funny how, like, you know, you follow people's lives. And, like, social media now is, like, a big thing. Where, like, you can see that everyone goes through this thing after high school and college where they're, like, it's, like, I've been so worried, because you're so worried about yourself, and then you go through puberty and you're very worried about everyone else. You're suddenly very conscious of what everyone else, like, is thinking and worrying about, and, like, everyone cares about what I'm doing. Like, you go through this thing. And so it's funny that, like, when we graduate out of that, you could just look at everybody around you. They all start going, it's about me again. Like, I need to reclaim myself. I'm not going to do this anymore. Like, this is me now. Like, mm-hmm. I work, you know, I find my job, I do my things. Like, it's funny the shift in that. I think when you're child too, it's like you're not aware of everyone else at first. Mm-hmm. You're comfortable with being stupid on the playground. You will put on weird clothes. You will, you know, do whatever just because you don't really have that, like, other kids haven't become aware of you yet, like, mm-hmm. in that way for a little while. Some of them do, you know, you get bullied, whatever, but yeah. but it's interesting, that shift. So mm-hmm. it's like they're so involved with themselves at this point as children that, like, like, they didn't think about the other, mm-hmm. the James. Like, you know, mm-hmm. his experience was not important to them. Mm-mm. It was how he could provide for their experience.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's just that is not there yet. It's right. just not available to them.
Yeah. And, like, the simplest terms, I a memory came to my head of, like, when I had my Barbies and I was like, I'm going to get my Barbie a haircut. Mm-hmm. And you give Barbie a haircut. And her hair doesn't grow back.
Nope.
And you don't realize that until it's too late. Mm-hmm. And then you cry a lot about it. But it's mm-hmm. like, in the simplest terms, it's the same idea, just on a much larger scale. Because you just don't understand that once that is gone, it is gone. Mm-hmm. And you did that thing. And there are consequences to that thing. And as far as, like, the people, too, I mean, it's heartbreaking to, like, know it could have been intervened so many times, but I don't blame any of them. Like, they all did what they thought was the best thing in that moment, and, like, and that's totally valid. Just moving forward, we as humans just need to do a better job. If we see something suspicious, you know, step forward and say something, reach out to someone. Now we have more technology. Like, in 93, they didn't have as much, right? So, like, a cell phone, like, making a phone call might not have been as easy for some folks, right? As in now, we've all got them in our back pockets.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. You can just call the cops instead of having to bring them to the thing. Or,
and you can anonymously call them, too. If you're worried about getting your name involved, you can make that so that they don't even know who you are, but you're talking about this thing that's happening.
Yeah, and I'm sure that people would very much rather just deal with the miscommunication. And, you know, I know that there's, like, if I had many mouths, I could say a lot of things at once about calling the police. Mm-hmm. I understand that that is also very scary.
Yes.
And can turn out very badly as well.
Yes. Right.
So I can see why people hesitate. If, like I said, if I had two mouths, I would say two things at the same time, right? But I only have one, so one thing at a time, which is you know, it. I feel like people would rather go through the embarrassment of going, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize that there was nothing wrong, than being having to come into court and say I could have done something and I didn't.
Right.
Right? Like, you'd rather just go through the embarrassment than, like, the court.
Right,
because, case, you know,
in theory,
because
in theory, the way the system should work is that you should be able to do that without unpredictable consequences, which unfortunately happens in today's world, mm-hmm. depending on where you're at, you know, terrible things can happen.
Who you are and when you call. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. When all you're just trying to do is, like, maybe the right thing in your mind, and, like, the people who are then called to that scene should then take the appropriate actions.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what the actual truth is. That's what you're there to find out, rather than jumping to conclusions and doing terrible things.
Yeah.
So, yes, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, where it's like, I'm trying to, if I had two mouths, I would do that, but I don't. But I, you know, it's just worth the embarrassment sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, you may totally, with all of the information given to you, go, cool, checks out, because you are only given the information that is handed to you, which mm-hmm. is, this is my little brother and we're taking him home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I do not know that. I do not know I can trust you with that. Cool. Like, and it's 93. Kids were allowed to be outside more.
That's true, too.
Like, so you'd see children, like, children were allowed to be outside and mm-hmm. have independence and do things. So, like, you just saw kids out all the time.
Yeah, because, normally now, I think if I saw a couple 10-year-olds with a 2-year-old, I'd be like, hold on.
Yeah.
You can't care for that child.
People don't let their kids outside, yeah.
Well, even that, but, like, I don't think a 10-year-old can care for a 2-year-old. Like, I don't know about that. So
it depends. I've seen, I guess, you know. You guys, I watched that Old Enough show in Japan. Where
that's
this
true. Yeah, I don't have a reference.
Like, but they're also, the people don't let their children outside to play anymore. Mm-hmm. So, like, mm-hmm. that would be my red flag. I don't see kids out because people are too afraid and kids have done whatever. So kids don't know how to do shit anymore. But, like, because they're not allowed to. But, mm-hmm. so of course, that would be a huge red flag.
Yeah.
But it's awful.
Yeah. Feels like, unfortunately, there is no right answer to this horrible thing that has happened. Everybody did exactly what they could do at the time, and rhyme or reason necessarily means it could have been different, you know? Like, mm-hmm. we can talk about all these different paths they could have gone down, but like we've all brought up, too, there's another red flag for that direction, too. Because, like, also, a stranger approaching three kids
that's
is
the other
also
right.
bad.
We don't know what this lady could have done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different levels. It is not a clear-cut solution and answer. And I think that that's really important to acknowledge.
Yeah.
Like, that there is no clear-cut answer on how this should have been done, because there are so many other unpredictable things that could have happened if X, Y, and Z took place.
It was an awful thing that happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
An awful,
just
awful
period,
thing.
Period, yeah.
But it was beautiful to like, see some of the images and clips that what the community did for the family.
Cool.
So it was really, you know, it was so sad and heartbreaking, but also just, like, how beautiful it was that they came and just supported this family so fully. And, like, so many people came to the funeral. And it doesn't, you know, change anything. It doesn't bring James back, but it does, you know, help kind of heal in a sense that how a community can heal, right, when we find our community and find each other in that and our support in that. And I feel like Denise did find that. And she had three other wonderful kids that helped keep James alive. Like,
yeah.
they talk about James and, like, share his stories of when he was a kid and show, like, home videos. And, like, they really grew up with James still in their life in a healthy way that, like, helped them grow up in a safer environment.
Mm-hmm.
And they would talk about, too, like, how sometimes it felt like she was hovering them a lot, but then when they grew up and got older, they realized why she did
why?
That and,
yeah.
like, totally understood.
Because it takes 2 seconds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just takes 2 seconds. It's so scary, you know, having a kid, I'm sure, because, mm-hmm. I mean, you hear so much that it's your heart existing outside of your body, right?
Yeah.
That is, and what I've seen further, it's your heart existing outside of your body, and it's trying to, like, get... It's trying to run out into traffic. Like, it's that kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
your heart is, like, it's, there's, they don't know to not do things, right? So, this kid saw other boys and was gone, you
mm-hmm.
know? He doesn't know that, they don't know that can happen.
Yeah.
At that age.
Yeah.
With their peers.
My little nephew is 5, and, like, my mom hates taking him to the store because he's very friendly. And
mm-hmm.
she's like, and he could just disappear,
yeah.
like, with strangers. Because he's just like, hey, everybody, I can talk now, and I like to tell everybody. I make jokes, too, that he's just going to go up to a stranger and give all of his information. Like, this is my name. This is where
yep.
I live. These are all, like, because he's learned them, and he's just excited that he knows them. And it's, like, a very cute, innocent thing, and also very scary.
Yeah, you just, they don't know that you can't tell that to everybody,
mm-hmm.
right? That's a hard thing to learn, to teach children, like, you cannot trust every adult,
mm-hmm.
which is so scary. Or now every peer. You don't know what people are capable of.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm glad that the community came together, and I'm glad that, like, you know, it's an interesting case, and it's heartbreaking and everything, and it's so wild that it happened, like, in a time where, like, now if a child goes missing, we get a text on our phone, or, you know, there's so much CCTV to, like, find and follow and all that stuff, and just the investigation, having to take that time, because of course you're going to look around the shopping center first.
Yeah.
And so it's crazy how fast they were able, I mean, you walk away, it's not, you know.
Yep.
So it's wild. Thank you for bringing that story, Nicole.
Yeah, it found its way onto my screen. I was doing research for a different story, and it kept popping up, and I was like, I think I should watch this video, and I did.
Yeah, and I know that was hard for you, so thank you.
Well, thank you for listening, and Beans, thank you for joining us. I know that that was a rough story, a very heartbreaking story. I know a lot of you are parents. We have nephews and nieces and all kinds of things. Give everybody extra cuddles today, and also grab extra coffee, extra shots of espresso, and maybe do a crazy dance, because you know what? Why not? Why not?
It's good for you.
It's good for you. I'm going to check out that site that you shared, Brenna. Thank you for sharing that.
I'm going to make sure that I send that so that it's in our notes.
In our notes. Thank you so much, Beans. We look forward to sharing more stories from you. Please keep sending us your stories. We're really enjoying reading these. Well, I guess, and maybe enjoying isn't the right word, because some of them are really cringy. But we love that you're reaching out to us and letting us know what's going on. Please continue to do so. And if you have more recommendations on different cases to look up, please, please continue to share those. And we will be back with more episodes here on
Morning Murders.
Smack. Smack.
Thank you for listening to Morning Murders.
Keep checking our page for new episodes and special guests.
Want to learn more? Swing by our Instagram to check out more information from our episodes at Morning Murders. That's MORNINGMURDERS.
Also, you can always check out some mental health links and our episodes resources in our show notes.
If you enjoyed listening to our highly caffeinated conversation, please leave us a 5-star rating and tell your friends.
If you have any stories you'd like to hear discussed around the Breakfast Nook, email us at morningmurders@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening!
Goodness gracious.
He's like, whoa.
Ben's like, and I'm here too!
And also, Ben.
Sefton, Sefton, Sefton.